Following programming is sponsored by the Museum of Sports. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
And Billy's men circled for the final run. Laker passes so crisp in the first half, wilted under the Sixer heat, and were fed into the Philly fast break. The 17-point Laker lead had dwindled to two. It was the final 3 minutes, the time of champions, and Julius Erving took control.
Every one of us is a walking museum of sports, from that first ball game with your folks to maybe taking your own kids to their first game to, that first nervous, sweaty autograph. It's the feeling we all get that brings us all back to our own personal Philly Field of Dreams. And the Museum of Sports show is on the air and ready to go there with you. I'm Doug Scheimel. Our show dedicated to sports memories, memorabilia, and the museum that is going to capture it all right here in Philadelphia. We're live on the Talk 860 and Museum of Sports Facebook pages, so check us out. And the Museum of Sports show brought to you by the Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. Joining me from his sports cave in Villanova, our guide and mentor, Comcast Spectacor legend, founder of the Museum of Sports, and author of the new book just out in the last couple of months, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showplace. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Lou Scheinfeld.
Well, thank you, everybody. I have to say that Tuesday night was a game, three games for the ages, if you are a Philadelphia fan. I had the 76ers playing New Orleans. I had Temple playing Cincinnati in basketball, and I had Villanova hosting DePaul. And I switched all night among all three, and all three won. I mean, I went to bed happy. Who gets three wins in one night?
Yep, just quit while you're ahead, yep. Given all the trends. And from her sports basement, actually, no, it's from your son's bedroom in South Jersey. is our Museum of Sports Director, Community Outreach, Susan Baxter. Hi, Susan.
Hello. It looks like the Denver Broncos have selected a new head coach, offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett. I'm pumped, to say the least. So I wanted Doug Peterson, but he probably denied. If I said no, thank you. So yeah, this is exciting.
Hey, coming up in our incredible show today, he is Mr. Philly College Sports from the inside and out, former athletic director at DePaul and Temple and LaSalle. Bill Bradshaw is back with us. At 440, he's our king of collectibles with the world's most valuable and largest sports memorabilia collection. It's going to be the collection that goes into the Museum of Sports. Nick DePaccia Jr. will be joining us. But up first, you see him down there in the Zoom box wearing that crazy looking, I guess that's the Florida shirt there. I don't know what that is.
Hawaii?
He was the general manager of the Sixers when they won their 1983 NBA title and went on to the front office at the Chicago Bulls and basically created the front office for the expansion Orlando Magic, and he proceeded to get them to the 1996 NBA Finals. He is a corporate speaker and author of the books Character Carved in Stone and Revolutionary Leadership, Lessons from the Men and Women of the American Revolution. A big Museum of Sports show. Welcome to Mr. Pat Williams. Hey, Pat.
Guys, it's nice to catch up with you, and I do need to explain my shirt. Have you ever seen anybody in an Hawaiian shirt having a bad day?
No, that's wonderful.
Just chew on that for a minute, and that'll explain it. But I'm so glad to be hooked up with you. I read Lou Scheinfeld's book in two sittings. It was that fascinating, and then had him on my radio show here about a week ago. And it's been nice to catch up with him as well, and it's always good to be back in Philadelphia, either in person or through this mechanism. I'm glad to be with you.
Yeah, Lou's book has been a big hit. And like I said, it was so nice. I bought it twice. It was my holiday gift of choice this year. And but it's just nice to see those behind the scenes stories. We used to call them the X-rated tales from the spectrum. Because Lou, as you said, you've sort of outlasted all your contemporaries, and now you can just let it fly. No fear of lawsuits.
Well, I, you know, but it costs $4,000 to get Bible insurance for the book. And I I decided to take a chance because everybody's dead. So unless one of their grandkids wants to sue me, and probably shouldn't, you know, jinx myself, but yeah. I've had a lot of fun with the book. The best part is people I don't even know reaching out to me, text, Twitter, call my house, you know, my cell phone, tell me about their experience at the Spectrum. And it's just been great to hear from all these folks.
Well, and I want to say, Doug, let me just add this. This has been in a period for Philadelphia-based authors.
Yeah.
Ray Didinger wrote his memoirs not long ago. Terrific read. Yeah. And then our friend Dana O'Neill wrote her book on the Big East. And then it comes along young Michael Sielski.
Exactly. And, just had him on.
Yes. Yeah. And he did this marvelous amount of research on young Kobe Bryant. I was fascinated with that book as well. So and then the veteran Lou Scheinfeld comes along with his book. And so this is book season in the Delaware Valley. Good for all of you.
Now, Pat, your books, and we'll get into this a little later, but your books have sort of been, you know, drawing sort of life lessons from the American Revolution. You're going to need, and maybe you've done, but you're going to need to put together that sort of tell-all, you know, kiss and tell, full frontal nudity, you know, Pat Williams behind the scenes.
Well, I've got a lot of deceased people as well. So I've
that's the prerequisite.
I've got to be careful. Harold Katz is still living.
Yeah, right. And near you too.
But I'm kidding, you know. But I've got it in me. I've got many stories, many tales.
So some of them, Pat, I got to tell you, a lot of people either may not know or may have forgotten that you and these could be the seed for some of those tales. You started as a catcher, both at Wake Forest. And then in the minors, and the name jumped out at me was the Fort Myers Mighty Mussels. Was that red or white sauce, Pat?
Well, they came later, but I my roots are in baseball. I grew up in Wilmington, Delaware. Went to Tower Hill School. Yep. Played all three sports there. Then went to Wake Forest to catch on the baseball team. And then I graduated in. Early June of 1962, signed with the Phillies, spent 2 years as a minor league catcher in their farm system. The Miami was then their farm club at that level. And Andy Simonek, the old Phillies catcher, was my manager for 2 years. Huh. That first year, we had two 18-year-olds who had just signed. One was a pitcher named Ferguson Jenkins, and our left fielder was a youngster from Detroit named Alex Johnson. Wow. And both went on and had very, very interesting careers. Alex is no longer living, but I do run into Fergie from time to time, and he's always very generous in his praise. Pat Williams, he was my first catcher in organized baseball in Miami, and so I have many fond memories of my time with Fergie Jenkins. He was a 18-year-old kid with great potential. The Phillies made a mistake in trading him. Just as they did with Ryne Sandberg, two future Hall of Famers, you know, made their mark in Chicago. But I have memories of both of them.
Hey, Pat, in the minors, I may be way off on this, but I kind of remember something about you getting married at home plate or putting on a promotion where somebody got married at home plate.
Well, it wasn't me, Lou, but when I got to Spartanburg, I played those 2 years. Spent the 64 season as an intern in Miami, learning the ropes. And then the Phillies sent me to Spartanburg in February of 1965. I was 24 years old. And I had been absolutely imbued with the philosophy and the spirit of Bill Veeck about presenting, you know, his mission was very clear. Don't sell the game on the won and lost column. It's too risky. But you can guarantee that your fans, whenever they come to the ballpark, are going to have fun. They're going to be entertained. And in many cases, they're going to be surprised by what might go on. So my philosophy, Lou, when I got to Spartanburg, anything that was clean, moral, and legal, we would do. and we did. And that little ballpark was humming for those 4 years. We had some good teams. The 66 club, Denny Doyle was our second baseman and Larry Bowe was the shortstop.
Really?
Pretty good Keystone combination. Yeah. And so, but I learned that, you know, it's important to use your imagination, free up your creativity, you know, and present the games that way. And then, Lou, the big question was, can Williams do this in the big leagues? You know, that was, I always kept hearing that. This will fly in Spartanburg, but the big leagues, nah. Well, anyway, Jack Ramsey reached out to me, brought me to Philadelphia in the fall of 68. The Spectrum was, 2 years old? Yeah. And Jack went to training camp the next day and basically said, you know, run with it, it's yours. So the end result was Spartanburg North. And anything that was clean, legal, and moral, we did it. And then on to Chicago and kept following that format. So I think people are people. I think fans are fans. Whether they're in a minor league baseball city or in the big leagues, they want to be entertained. They want to get their money's worth. They want more than their money's worth.
Well, I mentioned in the book, Pat, that you had Howard Eskin mud wrestling. It was supposed to be cheerleaders, but turned out to be sumo women. Very large females pinning him.
That image in my head.
He enjoyed that, I'm sure.
Lou, I never will forget that, and neither will Howard. But in those days, this whole thing of mud wrestling was a big deal. You know, they would have a big pool, like, and then they would dump these bags of some sort of mud in there. I'm sure the people running the Spectrum were not real thrilled, but it was post game, and out came Howard, just flexing and, you know, taunting.
And did he have something to flex then?
he was a big boy then.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And out came these two women in their tank suits or whatever it was. Let's describe them as
vivacious.
How about beefy?
Beefy.
Yeah.
How about beefy?
Vivacious.
They were. Their nickname was Chops. But they came out.
Yeah.
And Howard took them on. I mean, Howard did not want to be embarrassed. You know, can you imagine these two big ladies just squashing him? But Howard fought him off, and we declared him the winner. And to this day, he's so proud of that victory. He dominated these two ladies with mud all over them. And my children were there that night, Lou, and they still to this day, that's the highlight of their time in Philadelphia.
I'd be in therapy.
Howard asked down in the pool with the mud wrestlers.
Yeah, that could have meant years of therapy too, Pat. Could have meant years of therapy seeing that.
Well, that may have been the cause for Howard's bizarre behavior even to this day.
It was baseball that gave you your taste of a front office gig, though. Was that kind of what made that baseball basketball transition then?
Well, I'll tell you what made the transition. You know, anybody at that level wants to get to the big leagues. Wants to see if they can do their thing in the major league city. And all my goals and ambitions were directed towards baseball. I was in my fourth year in Spartanburg. I walked into our little office one morning, and there was a phone message to return a call to a Jack Ramsey in Inglewood, California. And I thought, what in the world could that be about? Jack Ramsey? I lived in the Palestra as a kid growing up, you know, watched him down on one knee, barking at those Hawks. You know, I loved Jack Ramsey from afar. He was the GM of the Sixers. I returned the call. And Jack said, I'm out here. We're trading Wilt Chamberlain to the Lakers. And he said, Alex Hannum is not returning as the coach. And he said, I'm going to take over the coaching duties in addition to the GM job. And I need somebody to look after and oversee and run the front office. I'll be gone. Would you be interested? Well, I'd never met Jack Ramsey. He'd never met me. I mean, it was really, really strange. And to turn the ropes of a front office over to a 28-year-old kid from a minor league baseball operation?
Wow.
What could possibly go wrong?
That would never happen today. So I came, I finished the baseball season, came up to Philadelphia. I guess it's late August, early September. Jack hands me the keys and says, I'm going to training camp tomorrow. Do your thing, something to that effect. And off we went. And, little Arlene, the dynamic eater of 76 pizzas and 54 hot dogs.
Triumph.
Rich, how about Dick Allen and the Ebonistics? Came to the Spectrum one night. He had just recorded a song called The Echoes of November. And we brought Dick Allen and his Ebonistics out to perform one night. Oh, we let her all fly. And it was quite a time. And then 1 year later, the Bulls offered me the GM job. And my time in Philly lasted just 12 months. But then I came back after 5 years and became the club in the summer of 74.
Timing is everything, because that was sort of the wonderful glide path there. And Lou, were you still a big part of that? Was your heyday too? I mean, was Lou the genius that he tells us that he has always been, Pat?
Oh, I remember Lou Scheinfeld as a young guy, and I'll tell you what, he was not one of our great friends, because he was the hockey guy.
He was a leg breaker.
He was a hockey guy, and hockey, I've learned over the years that hockey and basketball people don't really get along.
Oh, that's terrible.
Well,
I never knew that.
Let me explain that, because the hockey people in every case own the building. And they oversee the scheduling, and they always pick the good dates. We always felt we were getting,
I love this,
secondhand stuff, but Lou was colorful, dynamic, creative. He was a risk taker, and he had this incredibly fascinating owner named Ed Snyder. Mm-hmm. And I knew Ed Snyder. We all knew Ed Snyder. He was a very intimidating guy. You know, he would come down that hall heading to the Flyers offices, and you just got out of the way. He was a force. And Lou worked with him for all these many years, and none of us would have known what that was like until this book just came out. And to read Lou's memories of Ed Snyder and his experiences with him and his stories is fascinating. It's an absolute must read. And so I came away, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, just saying, this is a Lou Scheinfeld I didn't really know. I really like this guy after all those six or, and then
everybody hated him then. They love him now.
After I came back, darn if Lou Scheinfeld doesn't end up with the Sixers.
All right.
and he tells that story of how he arrived. We were having attendance problems, you know, even with Julius and the championship, it was tough for us to draw people. That's why I am so fascinated with this 76ers situation today. I mean, the building's packed every night, and they've got this long list of people that want season tickets. I can't get over it, because even with Wilt, I mean, Philly's had great attractions, Wilt, and then Julius, they had that wonderful run at the gate with Iverson, and then it dropped off again. And now I'm sure it's all Embiid related, I'm sure. But boy, oh boy, every night,
20,000 people.
Unbelievable.
The Flyers are playing to half a house right now, and they're blaming a lot of that on COVID. But it doesn't seem to be affecting the Sixers fans. Pat, I loved working with you. When I got to the Sixers, I had a lot of respect for you before I got there because of your, I use the word canny, C-A-N-N-Y, which is a complimentary word, ability for promotions, including Vince Papali fighting a bear, was it a bear? A kangaroo?
Victor the Wrestling Bear with his manager, Tuffy Truesdale. And we brought the bear out, and I had wrestled that bear in Chicago earlier, and I got a little sense of it. And I said, I don't want to do this again, but we need somebody, you know, just a tough, strong, aggressive guy. And who better than Vince Papali? You know, the legend.
And Pat, this is like a real live bear. This isn't a guy in a
bear.
Yes,
it was. No, he had a, okay. He had a muzzle on.
Oh, well, that would make me feel better.
No, Pat. Vince had a muzzle on, not the bear. Right?
No, Vince needed a muzzle. The bear had terrible, terrible bad breath.
Yeah.
But aside from that, he stood up. The bear stood up, and he would put his paws on you, and then he would just lean on you. And he was, you know, a bear, what, 400 pounds or whatever, just leaning on you. And Vince didn't realize the importance of just going along with it and just falling backwards. Vince started punching at the bear and started literally fighting him. And the end result, Vince got cut up pretty good. I mean, he got bear ripped open a side of his face, and there was blood everywhere.
Right.
And so, listen, between Howard Eskin and the mud wrestler and Vince Papale and the wrestling bear, boy, we had a couple of dandies there.
Yeah, but aside from that, your business acumen, resulted in you being responsible for bringing Julius Erving to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Wow.
Lou, that was an amazing story. Remember, we all remember Fitz Dixon, and F. Eugene Dixon had bought the club from Irv Kozloff in the spring of 1976. Now, that would be right, spring of 76. That was the summer of the merger of the two leagues. Julius belonged to the Nets, but there was a huge contract dispute. He didn't report to camp, and I kept calling Billy Melchione, another Philly guy, who was the GM of the Nets, and I said, is he available? Would he be available? No. Call me back. And Billy, 2 weeks later, he called back, said he's available. I said, what do you need? He said, cash.
Yeah.
He said, our owner has got some serious financial problems. And I said, Billy, how much? He said, $3
million. Wow. Well,
$3 million in 1976.
That's a lot of dollars.
Damaging. And I said, well, Billy, what the other piece is, how about signing him? He said, that's going to take another three for 5 years. I said, I think that adds up to six. I was not a math major, $6 million. But I knew that we all knew the greatness of this guy. And so I took a deep breath, called Fitz Dixon. I said, I need to come out and see you, sir. So I got in my car and dashed out to Erdenheim Farms in Lafayette Hills. How's that sound, Lou?
Yeah.
And he was there, walked in. And I said, I'd learned to, he said to call him Fitz. So I said, Fitz, Julius Erving is available. And he said, Pat, tell me, who is Julius Erving? Now understand, Fitz was not he was thrilled to own the team. He was not a basketball guy. And I explained to him, I said, here's the story. He's the Babe Ruth of basketball.
Yeah.
And then Fitz said, well, tell me, Pat, what's it going to take to get him? And here's this new owner, Lou, and how do you say $6 million to any to take? three to buy him, three to sign him. And then Fitz looked at me and with those little eyes, you know how it was, Lou, and he said, tell me, Pat, he said, are you recommending this deal? And I said, yes, sir, I am. And he said, well, then go get it done.
Wow.
Yeah.
The meeting was over, and we grabbed the lawyers, Peter Mattoon and the other lawyers, and 30th Street Station, mad dash to New York, broke off. One group went to the Nets, and one group went to Julius's people, two deals going on all night long. And the next morning, it was done, Thursday morning.
Woohoo!
Late that afternoon, we had this huge press conference to announce this news. And the next night was opening night, the new season. And Julius dressed and played.
Wow.
San Antonio was in town with George Gervin and all that crew, and ABA team. And we lost at home. And the next night, we go up to Buffalo, and we lose again. We're 0-2. However, it changed after that, and off we went.
Yep.
And what a crew. This was Julius and George McGinnis and young Daryl Dawkins and Lloyd Free. Oh, boy. And a young Joe Bryant, the father of a very newborn Kobe.
Yep.
And Caldwell Jones and Doug Collins. What a group. What a group.
Jeez. And it leads to that 83 championship, and I guess you were thinking that this is going to be, you know, the seed of a dynasty. It doesn't quite turn out that way, and then you become sort of like the king of the next big expansion team down there in Orlando.
Well, we went on. We got to the finals in 77. We got to the finals in 80. Got to the finals in 82, but just couldn't get over the hump. And then the big deal, Moses Malone arrives. I don't know whether you're following the Athletic, they're ranking the 75 greatest players of all time, 75 down to one. They just did number 18, and that was Moses.
Oh.
And the day before, they did 19, and that was Dr. J.
Wow.
The 19th and the 18th greatest players of all time, according to these guys. And they wrote wonderful reviews and stories about them. But Moses got us over the hump. He was relentless. He was a force. And he was, in his own way, he was a colorful character. That famous quote at the end of the regular season in 83, what are the playoffs going to be like, Moses? What's going to happen? He said, fo, fo, fo. What he meant was, we're going to sweep them in four and four and four. That's what he meant.
Yeah.
But Moses had a Virginia dialect that you couldn't always understand. And the writers just heard, fo, 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 fo. Well, that has become one of the most famous quotes in sports history.
Yep.
Moses' famous fo, fo, fo. Well, we lost one game to Milwaukee that year. And so the rings are engraved fo, five, fo.
But hey,
that was a great quote.
We're bumping up against our time here. This is phenomenal. We go on forever. I've got to ask you before we go, because we are the Museum of Sports show. What's your number one or number two piece of sports memorabilia that you've got back there in the Wall of Fame there, or maybe it's in a vault?
Well, one of them I've got. And I was a huge baseball fan, loved the A's. And I wrote a letter when I was about 12. To Connie Mack at 21st and Lehigh, Scheib Park. And I got this beautiful handwritten note back from Connie Mack. Well, I don't know what that's worth today, but it's worth a lot to me.
Oh, I think what we're going to do is in our segment after the next segment, the family who has the world's largest and most valuable sports memorabilia collection, Nick DiPaccia Jr., a king of collectibles. We're going to ask him about that. And I've been threatening now for 8 months. We're going to have a 1 hour bring your memorabilia on, you and John Wertheim and some other notables. And we always like doing the shock the crap out of the guest with a spot appraisal. So if you can find that letter, we're going to have you bring that.
Now that's the key. Where is it?
Well, we'll give you a little bit of lead time on that.
I saved all that stuff from my youth. I have every scorecard from the Palestra Lou from my teen years.
Oh, wow.
You know, I saved them, clipped the ticket stub on. I was a collector then. I haven't done quite as much of it here of late. But anyway, I'm so excited about the potential of this sports museum. And I'm also thrilled, you know, these guys started up the Philadelphia Sports Hall of Fame some years back. And I think that's the biggest away from the field event of the sports calendar in Philly. Just a tremendous event. And these guys or women go in and they're thrilled.
Yep.
And,
What we'll have to do is, Lou, you'll have to set aside an exhibit for Pat's Connie Mack letter. Mr. Front Office Legend, 76 Front Office Legend, author of Character Carved in Stone and Revolutionary Leadership Lessons from the Men and Women of the American Revolution. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Pat Williams. Pat, thank you so much. Come back anytime and let us know when you find that letter.
I'm so glad to be with both of you, all of you. Thank you. Nice to see
you, Pat.
Everyone.
Take care,
Pat. Good seeing you, Pat. That was wonderful.
Take
and we
care,
want to
guys.
Make sure our viewers and listeners go to themuseumofsports.org to make a tax-deductible contribution today or buy a copy of Lou's new tell-all book about the Flyers and the Spectrum. All proceeds benefit the Museum of Sports. And you can be part of Philly Sports Shrine today. When we come back, he's Mr. LaSalle and Mr. Temple. Bill Bradshaw will be joining us when the Museum of Sports show continues right here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. Back in a couple of minutes.
The Museum of Sports Show is presented by Depatchi Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatchi is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat heart disease, hypertension, palpitations, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Dr. Nicholas Depatchi, MD, FACC, author of 4 books and over 100 articles and abstracts at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034. Can you imagine Philadelphia without the Broad Street Bullies or its fabled Spectrum Arena? Well, it almost happened until Lou Scheinfeld and Ed Snyder, otherwise known as Flash and Cash, teamed up to rescue the Flyers and got America's Showplace up and running. It was 1967 and the world was in a whole different place. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's heartfelt memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, available soon on Amazon, eBay, and Barnes & Noble. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get it. Children are our future, and communities must look out for their well-being. Mission Kids Child Advocacy Center strives to achieve healing and justice for victims of child abuse by providing collaborative services, advocacy, leadership, and education. Visit missionkidscac.org to learn how you can get involved. That's missionkidscac.org.
58,000 Americans died in a land they did not know or understand. And nowhere else in our nation has the pain of Vietnam been felt more than at Philadelphia's Edison High School. 64 of its students perished more than any other high school. Order this heartfelt story now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Edison 64, A Tragedy in Vietnam and at Home by Richard Sand. All proceeds benefit Veterans Multi-Service Center.
Hello there. This is Jim Leeming, your Ballantyne sportscaster. Once again, pro football reached new heights with record crowds. And of course, the top team of the year was the Philadelphia Eagles.
Now we're back on the Museum of Sports show on Talk 860 of the Museum of Sports Facebook live pages, brought to you by Depatchi Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. I'm Doug Scheinmel, along with Lou Scheinfeld and Susan Baxter. Our next guest knows college sports from the inside out as a baseball player at LaSalle and later becoming athletic director both there and at Temple University and also at DePaul. A big welcome back on the Museum of Sports show to Mr. Bill Bradshaw, who, Bill, I think you're going by your pseudonym, Connor Bradshaw there.
Oh, how about that? Maybe might be his equipment that I'm using, Doug. But hello to all of you there. Look forward to being with you and we'll have some fun.
Yeah, and we're taking it on faith that you there. We can kind of got a good silhouette on you there. I don't know if you can tilt your laptop screen down there so we get your beautiful face. Yeah. There we go. Yeah. That looks perfect. Beautiful. Hey, I mentioned DePaul because I think some folks, do they forget that DePaul was kind of tucked into your illustrious career?
16 years in Chicago.
Yeah.
And that's where I met my bride and 3 children were born. So yeah, Chicago was a big part of my career. And I'm disappointed the Blue Demons are a perennial last in the Big East, but maybe they'll make a comeback in the next couple of years.
Exactly. I know Lou had a bunch of stuff for you because, you know, we're deep into, college basketball now. And I don't know what restrictions they'll put on it. Seems like everything's open and playing. And as we get to the NIT and March Madness.
I wanted to get your take, Bill, on the musical chairs that the conferences are playing in collegiate sports. Is this a good thing or a bad thing, or when will it shake out?
Well, Lou, that's a big issue right now, as everyone knows. And when I get asked these questions, why is Rutgers in the Big Ten and why is Pitt in the ACC in Maryland? And, you know, and I always say it's the color green, as you know, from your many positions in pro sports. Why did this coach go here? Why did Coach Kelly go to down to the SEC? When you hear these things, it's always the color green. It's money. It's the bottom line. A conference feels they can make more money with a particular team in a market and all the television sets in that area. A school leaves because they're going to get a much bigger check from this conference than the one they left. So it's a very unsettling time. It's the most complicated time that I remember that we've had in the NCAA and in conference affiliation.
Has the NCAA lost its power? They don't seem to be able to stop anything anymore.
Massive changes ahead. The NCAA may not be what it is. It may not be called the NCAA. But the gap between those who have and those who haven't is just getting wider. You know, we have 360 programs in Division I, but a lot of them don't look alike. 130 of them are big-time football, and even in that 130, there's probably 50 or 60 who have budgets about $200 million a year, and the rest, you know, are looking from the outside.
Where does Temple belong? They seem to be in the wrong place, another wrong league. And I did, you know, they're not drawing anybody to be charitable. It's pretty sad at the Leah Corus Center. Although they have a good team this year, they're 11-6, and they've had some exciting games. But they maybe get 2,000, 3,000 at the most.
Yeah, the Temple is in a very difficult position. The strength of Temple is Philadelphia. You know, the fourth largest media market. You'd think someone would look at that and say, we really need a presence in that area, in South Jersey, Philadelphia. And the ACC is devoid of that right now between Virginia and Boston College. But Temple is kind of the odd person out here with Villanova in the Big East and the other schools sort of in leagues that make sense for them. So I feel sorry for Temple. There's been a series of coaching hires in football that have been difficult, and football's kind of fell by the wayside after Matt Rhule. Basketball's picking up a little bit under Aaron McKee after Fran Dunphy. So we'll just have to see how Temple does. They're going to have to cut their own course and maybe even join another league somewhere that makes more sense.
Is it a reflection, though, of how much money they put into their program?
A little bit, Susan, it is. The big dogs, you know, budgets of $200 million, and I would dare say Temple's maybe a little bit north of $50 or $60 million. So when you look at the facility,
it's a big difference.
It's a big difference. Commitments to salaries, all of that makes recruits look at your campus when they visit. All of those things are important. But I still think Temple has enough strengths, and Philadelphia is enough of attraction that there should be a better place for Temple when it all settles down.
What about but the Bill, players? Go ahead. I'm sorry, Doug.
I can't remember, Lou, and stop me if we had. Bill, the last time you were on, I think the name and likeness, one of the latest rulings had come out for collegiate athletes. Are we already starting to see or feel the impact of that whole name and likeness capability for collegiate athletes to start to monetize their time in college? And could that be a good thing for a program like a Temple's, or do you think that's going to be the demise?
Yeah, you're right on target there, Doug, with the issues that are driving a lot of this unsettling in conferences. One, the name, image, and likeness, which allows now athletes to get compensated in many different ways. The second is the transfer portal. Coaches will tell me that they spend more time looking at transfers than high school prospects. So when you combine this NIL, which allows you to pay them, it's like the wild, wild west out there.
Yeah.
It would be very difficult to track down where the money came from, how much it really is. It's just going to be awful. And now you've got gambling as a part of sponsorships for universities, you throw that in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Uncle Bob needs some money for his operation. Don't win by 12 this week, you know.
That's what my fear all along, all the old betting scandals going back to the turn of the last century, and we're going to see them, you know, probably adjusted and refined again. That you hit the nail on the head, Bill.
And you see those three things, young men were saying, or young women, I want to go to another school where I'm going to play more, where maybe I'll make more money. And that's going to be the bottom line. Now, people will say it's not, that they need a major or they need to graduate yeah. in a different way, but it's going to be the color green for them. And it's yeah. going to be the color green for sponsors, boosters, car dealers. You know, it's the Wild West.
It just has a bad feeling to it, Bill. I mean, if you were yeah. in the front office, I mean, could you figure out, or do you see a way that it could be turned into a positive for cash flow for the university? I don't know if there's a, you know, image and likeness tax, you know, I don't know what I'm making stuff up, but I'm just wondering that as opposed to it feeling more like a decay of a program, if there's some way it can get flipped and become a positive.
Right now, there's no curbs on all this, Doug. So looking at it, the concept and the senators and the congressmen all feel that athletes should get paid. And I had to go in front of them a few years ago. They all think they're starving, that they're being used. It's like slavery. I mean, that's how they think. Yeah. And as long as they think that way, they're going to be very encouraged to have legislation at the federal level, which dictates all this. And that's why the NCAA is in trouble as well. Because the NCAA has been archaic. The big rule book, which is about 500 pages, is trying to apply to 360 yeah. schools that have so many diversities. They're not alike. So that's driving it, because the haves, those, the elites who have a bit bigger commitment financially, they want their own rules. They don't think that Monmouth and Fairfield should be allowed to vote on whether they can increase scholarships and all those kind of things. So it's going to be interesting. This year is going to be really interesting in the world of intercollegiate sports.
Oh, I have a personal question for you. You're down there basking in the sun in Florida. You didn't leave Yvette up here in freezing Radnor, did you?
She had an opportunity to, but the COVID bug came along. So Connor is going to be there in Marco Island. And we have athletic director meetings. This is the NACTA organization, and we plan our convention. And I'm a past president. They invite the past presidents down even when you retire. So I'll find out more of what's going on there. But yeah, I left my bride behind, Lou. Shame on me.
So it's an actual working AD's trip. I thought this was just another one of these junkets they throw together, you know, for the old gang.
We call it working, Doug. there's meetings and there's, you know, yes, we have a schedule and there's some realistic things, but most of the things happen in the hallway. Most of them happen yeah. in the lobby, but we do get a chance. A lot of the commissioners will be there and the top ADs from the Power Five will be there. So it's always an interesting time to catch up with what's going on.
Yeah, that might be the time to talk about image and likeness and, you know, what do? Tax it, fee it, you know, who knows?
And this will all be in the lobby because it's going to be 39 degrees Saturday in Marco Island
yeah.
and 38 wow. Sunday, you know, going up to the 60s, Susan, but still, you know, it's not what yeah.
we it's cold expect. Down there.
Florida isn't all it's cracked up to be, highly yeah. overrated.
Hey, so they had to, you had to watch out for iguanas or something because exactly. the iguanas were falling exactly. out of the sky.
Hey, Bill, before we go, being the Museum of Sports show, I have to ask my reflexive question. And I can't remember if we've asked you this before. Anything in your own personal sports memorabilia collection?
I have a few trinkets here and there, a few baseball bats that are autographed. Some mementos from my manager, Ted Williams, with the Texas Rangers. Some other people that along the way that I was fortunate enough to meet or play with or for. So I might have something there, but in Lou's book, I read about some things that are just unbelievable. You know, Wilt's jersey and just different things that he's got lined up there. It's the big leagues. So I'm not sure any of mine measure up to that, but we'll find out.
You never know. You never know. I've been threatening now for 8 months to have a bunch of folks back on for an all spot appraisal show with Nick DiPaccia Jr., our king of sports collectibles, whose family has the museum that will reside at the Museum of Sports. And you never know. Pull out some of those things. We were talking to Pat Williams before. He has a handwritten letter from Connie Mack. He'd written to him and Connie Mack had written back. And I said, you've got it. You've got that letter. And he goes, it's a good question. I have to find it. I said, those you need, those need to be in a vault. So start rummaging through some of your stuff there, Bill, and let Lou know. And we'd love to have you back on once we get a date on our scare the hell out of
I could just head over to his house. It's only 10 minutes from here. And right. I'm sure Yvette would be happy to show me all your good stuff.
Lou will track me down, Doug. There's no question about it.
Oh, yeah. He rides around in the U-Haul truck. We kid about that. But no, he rides around the U-Haul truck.
You know what? Before we go, we were talking to Pat Williams before. And he started out as a catcher in the Phillies farm system, Spartanburg and a couple other places.
Who knew?
Yeah. And Bill was also a very promising baseball player. Almost made it to the majors. And my son did not know this. And you were hitting some baseballs with him and your son a few years ago. And he said you were going, these things were going like 360 feet off your bat.
At least, Lou. Yeah, at least they were going that. I remember that. I remember that. And those guys said, hey, Dad, come on, stop that. You're an old man. You can't be doing this.
That's what my wife said last night.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, stop it. Oh, my God. Stop that, both of you. Well, I'll tell you what, LaSalle DePaul and Temple AD legend Bill Bradshaw, you're a wonder. And we're thankful to have you join us whenever you can on the Museum of Sports show. Thank you and enjoy that 30-degree Florida weather.
You three are great. Thanks so much. Yeah.
All right, Bill, thanks so much. Be safe. Up next, the King of Sports Collectibles when the Museum of Sports show continues right here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. We'll be right back.
The Museum of Sports show is presented by Depatchi Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatchi is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat shortness of breath, brain fog, chronic disease, autonomic dysfunction syndrome, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Nicholas Depatchi, MD, FACC, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034. Children are our future, and communities must look out for their well-being. Mission Kids Child Advocacy Center strives to achieve healing and justice for victims of child abuse by providing collaborative services, advocacy, leadership, and education. Visit missionkidscac.org to learn how you can get involved. That's missionkidscac.org.
58,000 Americans died in a land they did not know or understand. And nowhere else in our nation has the pain of Vietnam been felt more than at Philadelphia's Edison High School. 64 of its students perished more than any other high school. Order this heartfelt story now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Edison 64, A Tragedy in Vietnam and at Home by Richard Sand. All proceeds benefit Veterans Multi-Service Center.
Hey, buddy, what can I get you? How about the ultimate sports memorabilia basement?
Welcome back to the Museum of Sports show here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. I'm Doug Scheimel along with Susan Baxter and Lou Scheinfeld. Museum of Sports show brought to you by the Depatchi Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. Up next, our King of Sports Collectibles, whose family's memorabilia collection is well north of $35 million, and they will ultimately reside in the Museum of Sports. And ladies and gentlemen, a big weekly welcome to Nick Depatchi Jr. Hi, Nick.
Hey, guys.
You've got a little update, I understand, on the Washington Township facility. And sounds it's just always exciting to hear the updates.
Yes. Well, the most important update of a tentative opening date. My father actually gave me a concrete date that he wants to open. And that is April 15th, 2022.
2 days after my birthday. Wonderful. Yeah,
it's the day you got to file your taxes.
Yeah.
Does that mean free food and booze for the Museum of Sports Show staff?
I don't see why not.
I don't see why not also.
Hey, when Nick's father throws a party, he throws a party. Let me tell you, he knows how to entertain people. He's fantastic.
Ooh, the 15th is on a Friday, so we could tease the opening on the 14th there.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be very exciting. That's very exciting. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you're gonna have three freeloaders from this show down there, Nick, so be prepared.
Absolutely. Well, Lou, and go ahead, Susan.
No, I said, Lou, you have some news also?
Yeah, I do. As a matter of fact, two things. One is my daughter has helped arrange for Drexel University to look into doing a digital museum for the Museum of Sports.
Oh, fantastic.
Their interdigital media department at the school is looking into a virtual museum tour. So that'll be something that could benefit the museum if and when it ever opens in Philadelphia, and the one that's going to open April 15th. But the bigger news is that Durst Corporation, which got the rights to develop Penn's Landing with a multi-billion dollar do-over, which is already underway in planning, has brought into their, as a partner, Paul Badger Group, which is a minority construction, design, architectural firm here in Philadelphia that has been a very big booster of the Museum of Sports. And they've already talked to Durst about possibly including a Museum of Sports in the Penn's Landing development. So a couple of good things. I opened the paper the other day and I saw that Paul Badger got into this partnership, and I couldn't be more excited.
He's a big friend of the museums, and I know him through another client, HAPCO Philadelphia, who was a sponsor early on in the Museum of Sports show. And I can remember going back, I want to say to June of 1990, the Paul Badger Group was one of the finalists for the Navy Yard development. First thing Paul did was call me. Lou, we've talked about this, and Nick, I know you know about it. He said, is there any way I can make the Museum of Sports part of my proposal? Because they wanted a cultural aspect to it. Now, they did not get that project. Another group called Mosaic got it. But Paul is the lead minority developer on the Durst project, and his enthusiasm has not diminished. And that would be prime real estate, assuming it comes to pass, Nick.
Well, there's already one museum down there, the Seaport Museum, which will undergo a tremendous revitalization physically and in marketing. And the African American Museum, which is now over near the Mint at the 7th and over there, is going to be moved into the Penn's Landing. So if we have the Museum of Sports, now we're going to have three museums there. And I'm going to try and resurrect our beer museum friends from a couple of years ago and see if they'd like to be part of it. This could be another museum row in Philadelphia. And our sister museum over in Washington Township, it would be great. We could trade things back and forth because, and Nick, I know your dad's collection, your family collection is so massive that only a portion of it could fit in the museum over in Washington Township. So there'd be plenty for the Philadelphia site.
Absolutely.
And it'll be rotating stuff, right? Yeah, Nick, your plan is to rotate exhibits through there, correct?
Exactly. We always talk about this evergreen effect where seasonally we change, and you could do something for March Madness, something for the baseball season, for the NFL playoffs, if the museum were open right now. And I mean, we have something to cover literally everything. We have a lot of Olympic memorabilia that would be displayed during the Olympic seasons.
Yeah. From the 1980 U.S. winning the World Championship Olympics. Yeah. Nick, what's going on? Have you had any new acquisitions? Or are you looking at anything?
So not since last week. I think I told you last week about the Spectrum jerseys, the City edition we got. So we didn't have anything new, but there are some auctions coming up. We'll see. I know my mom intercepted the auction books, but you know, we'll find a way to get our hands on one, even if it did. Every year Hunt Auctions has the Super Bowl auction. This is the 14th annual one, and it's going to feature the John Hanna collection. John Hanna is a Hall of Fame offensive lineman. Made 9 Pro Bowls with the Patriots.
Wow.
In his collection, it includes a jersey of his from Alabama from 1970 to 1972, circa. And that's going to go for between $5,000 and $10,000, they think. 1973 college all-star helmet and jersey between 2,000 and 4,500 each. 1977 Pro Bowl helmet between 1,500 and 2,500. And his 1980 Offensive Lineman of the Year award, which is between 2 and 4,000. So that's in his collection.
Wow.
They're also going to have numerous game-worn items from the last few seasons. The highlight here, it looks like they're expecting their estimated value on a Justin Herbert rookie season Chargers jersey, 40 to 60,000, they estimated.
What?
That's unreal. That's crazy.
And Josh Allen, who just recently put up one of the greatest displays in playoff history in two games and still lost the second game, his Thanksgiving Day jersey from 2019 is expected to fetch over 30,000.
Nice.
They got a game used football Super Bowl 42, in which the Patriots lost to the Giants and also lost an undefeated season in the process. And then there's more historic items, such as Reggie White game used Packers helmet, which is between 10 and 15. Lawrence Taylor, New York Giants helmet from 1989, which is between 15 and 20,000. Even a Jackie Robinson autographed UCLA football display from 1939 to 1940. That's going to go between 3 and 5,000, they estimate.
Let me ask a question, Nick. We had Pat Williams on from Florida, the former GM of the 76ers in Orlando. And he said when he was 12 years old, he wrote a letter to Connie Mack and 21st and Lehigh, Shive Park, and he got a handwritten response, a beautifully on pen from Connie Mack himself and signed. He can't find it right now, but he's going to look for it.
We told him he has to have it by the next time he comes
on. Assuming he can find it, what kind of value can you put on something like that?
Well, Connie Mack, I mean, he's the father of baseball in Philadelphia, and he's one of the most famous owners in sports history, I think. I think your friend, Mr. Snyder and him are the two longest tenured owners in the history of sports. Is that correct?
50 years each.
50 years each. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a few thousand dollars. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. I noticed there was no Vikings memorabilia mentioned there, Nick, but I won't feel slighted.
Well, we were talking Super Bowl and you're Mr. Predictor. So who do you say is going to the big game this year?
I have to go with the chalk and go with the favorites, Kansas City and the Rams. And I'm going to go with the Chiefs to win it all. I will amend that pick for the Super Bowl if it turns out to be a different matchup. But
come on, Bengals.
I don't think that, unfortunately, I don't think the underdogs are going to pull it out this week. Although last week they proved us wrong. 3 out of 4 proved us wrong.
Yep. Yeah, the Eagles being that.
And the away teams. The away teams.
Hey, kids, that's our time for this week. Our King of Sports Collectibles, Nick DePaccia, thank you so much, as always, for your amazing insights in the world of collectibles. Don't forget to buy Lou's new book, Blades, Bands, and Boulders, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showplace. And you can get a custom autographed copy by going to themuseumofsports.org. And it's also available anywhere fine literature is sold. All proceeds benefit the museum. That's our time for this week. I want to thank our guest, former Sixers GM and author Pat Williams, Temple AD Bill Bradshaw, of course, Nick DePaccia Jr. Museum of Sports Show brought to you by the DePaccia Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. And make sure you've gone to themuseumofsports.org to make a contribution today. For Lou Scheinfeld, Susan Baxter, and Nick DePaccia Jr., I'm Doug Scheimel, reminding you what our good friend Carly Simon always says, Louis.
These are the good old days.
Yes, they are. See you next week, everybody.
These are the good old days. These are the good old days. These are the good old days.